I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is TC Daily, the technology show brought to you by Tech Central. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do so at youtube.com/TechCentral. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our daily newsletter? You can do that at techcentral.co.za/newsletter, and you'll get the latest local and international news and these shows delivered to your inbox at 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Now, I'm very pleased to welcome two top executives from Samsung into the studio to chat about the world of consumer electronics. Justin Hume is Vice President for Mobile, and Mike van Leer is Consumer Electronics Director, both at Samsung South Africa. Gentlemen, welcome, and thanks for joining me.
Hey, Duncan. Hi.
Thanks for having us, Duncan.
Lots to talk about. This is the week, we are recording this in the week of Black Friday, which I know is keeping you two very, very busy. I'm sure you have lots of plans for Black Friday. Maybe we can touch on that a little bit later in the discussion. Justin, let's start with the mobile side of things and have a discussion about what's happening in the mobile ecosystem. We know it's a tough old market out there at the moment. The South African economy is not in great shape, hasn't been in great shape for a number of years. Consumers are under pressure. Inflation is rising. Spending power is down. And we also know that consumers are upgrading their phones less frequently than they used to. How is this market shaping up, and how is it impacting on Samsung?
Duncan, thanks. So, you know, we think about the headwinds that are affecting us, and on a global basis, these macroeconomic factors are playing out. And with this postpaid market, you know, the contracts that we're all familiar with, or prepaid, the average replacement cycle has extended quite significantly. I suppose in the South African context, we often think of 24 months, right, being the term. But 36-month contracts have become very prevalent right now. And on average, globally, we're seeing the replacement cycle extend all the way up to about 47 months,
wow,
which is quite substantial. And that goes down to the quality of the build, just the capability of the devices that we've got at this point in time. But we believe that 2022 is the peak of that, and we're going to start to see a retraction based on certain innovations that are coming through in the market right now and the like, where that contract term is going to start pulling back towards the 40-month mark and so forth. So we are seeing that coming back. Having said that, it's amazing. You think about the pressure of inflation. You think about what's happened with fuel pricing. We think about what load shedding's done to the economy. The mobile phone market has been incredibly robust at this point in time. And there's a couple of factors that are attributing to that effect. You know, one, we're seeing this migration of 2G customers to 4G. A lot of discussion about operators switching off those networks, government talking about it at this point in time. That's one aspect of it, but very much in the premium segment even, where you would expect to see some pullback and the like. That market's alive and well. And we've seen customers kind of making that conscious decision of saying, well, if I'm going to be investing in this technology, let me stretch and let me go for the very best that's available out there. Having said that, I think there's also a number of new platforms, if I can call it that, coming into the market that are allowing customers to do this. And the one that I'd refer to is particularly trade-ins. South Africa hasn't been historically a market where the consumer has adopted that idea of, well, I've gone past my contract term or my, you know, the life cycle of my phone. Let me trade in. And we're very much in a hand-me-down market.
Yes.
You know, I pass my, Mike, here we go, or vice versa, whatever it might be. My kids, grandparents, whatever. But suddenly we're realizing, hang on, there's a stored value after this period in time. And again, it goes back to the quality of the product is still good. The technology platform is there to on-sell. And so that's allowing customers to buy back up into that premium segment.
It's interesting what you say about the refresh cycles, and you say they're going to start to shrink a little bit going forward. You almost get the impression that consumers have also become more wary of upgrading because they're not necessarily getting the huge upgrades that you saw, say, 5 or 10 years ago when smartphone development was at an incredible pace. The pace of development certainly seems to have slowed quite a bit. And, of course, companies like Samsung and others are now offering software updates that go well beyond what we saw historically. I think Samsung is now offering 4 years of Android updates, whereas in the past it was maybe 2 or 3 years.
Yes. So I think very much should you need your handset to last longer, it can do that. And in terms of the major shifts in technology, a lot of that has been, you know, this question's come through around, is my camera good enough? It's more software-orientated upgrades that are taking place, optimization of battery and the like. Nonetheless, I think there's products like our Galaxy Z Fold series. That is, it's a new form factor. It's bringing a new dynamic into the market. That's certainly prompting the upgrade to take place, and customers are seeing it. But also what we're seeing is that if I think about Generation 3, Generation 4 of the current model, that market is now coming through and upgrading at a quite a rapid rate. So there was some pullback. Watch the market. Let me see where the technology is. But as an example, that market would have been perhaps on a camera tech platform that gave them 20 megapixels, maybe 48 megapixels. Now suddenly it can jump into 108 megapixels. Okay, the gap is there. The shift is available. Plus, there's been this dynamic of work from home that took place. And even though, you know, we're starting to return to the office and the like, many companies have now moved their ERP solutions, their sales platforms online. You know, dealing with this. But now suddenly you and I have access to the data that we need from our mobile device. And we need the processing power to do that, screen capability, the battery life for that. And so I think it's also brought about a reinvigoration into that market.
You mentioned foldables. You're now on your fourth generation of foldable smartphones. Your principal competitor in the smartphone market still doesn't have a folding product in that category. What has the uptake been for your folding phones, both globally and in South Africa? And how big does the folding phone business eventually get? Does it eventually become more important to Samsung than the historical Galaxy S series, for example?
Okay, I think we've seen both platforms have a place right now in the market. Very much dependent on form factor preference, effectively. But the foldable, the folding capability is starting to find a loyal following, firstly. And what's interesting, particularly in that market, is that, you know, I was just talking about the replacement cycles. That market is actually replacing almost annually right now. So it's, well, a large portion of that market is replacing annually. So they're enjoying it. They're utilizing. Productivity is up. So definitely, I think the folding platform in the category will continue to gain purchase in the market. You know, it's been it's a journey, right? So it seems quite simple, but not all applications from the beginning were optimized to work in a screen that's folded. And if I can maybe just use my device here, you know, to go from this outer screen to the inner screen and have a synchronization of the application between the two. These are things that we had to work on with the likes of Instagram, Gmail, and the like, you know, YouTube and so forth. That's now coming into its own, and developers are now seeing that as, ah, I've got to develop not only for the bar type phone, but for the foldable category as well. So, yes, definitely we've staked a lot on making this a reality. We think the time is right for it. And issues of quality and durability, you know, we've proven that this is a viable product, that the consumer can utilize it. And so it certainly will be a mainstay of our launch schedule going forward.
Right. And it's very much been a premium product, of course, to date. I think the entry price is $1,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Is there a cheaper product in the foldable range? I think $1,000 is the starting price on the flip.
Put it into South African contract terms. So we're talking about Black Friday. You could go get this on a 36-month contract from $499 per month right now.
Okay.
Normal price, 36 months, would be around about 699 Rand, and on 24 months, 999. Okay, so that's the contract pricing. But yes, you're still talking about
it's a premium product.
20,000 Rand purchase price plus.
Does that go down into the sort of mid-range market at some point? Do you see foldable phones becoming a mass market product?
It will ultimately move there, yes, as we go into that category. Not this year, certainly. But ultimately, we do see that technology expanding and perhaps expanding categories as well. at this point. So we do see a future where this product becomes a broader portfolio.
Let's talk a bit about the mass market. The premium segment seems to be doing just fine. What's happening at the mass market? Consumers are under pressure. We know a lot of that pressure is on lower LSMs. How are you seeing? Let's start with the mid market and then talk mass market. Mid market is your A series devices.
Correct.
How are those doing in the market? What are you seeing out there?
So, I think the consumer wins in every price point right now. That A series in that mid tier. So we have A's right the way through, but in the mid tier of that, you know, the product today that you get is basically the equivalent of a flagship product 3 years ago or 2 years ago almost. It has the OS update supplied, the camera capabilities. In fact, in some cases, battery performance is next level in that regard. So very robust market as well. I really can't complain at any particular segment effectively there. In fact, that segment is the fastest growing segment of our business right now. Again, there's a couple of reasons for that, and one of the big introductions that we've made this year is the opportunity to bundle both the A series product with one of our ecosystem products, so our Galaxy, you know, the watch that we have, and we're seeing the customer shift into this broader ecosystem play. So I want the handset, but I want it to integrate with my tab, and I want it to integrate with my watch. And we've preached that message for, I think, as long as I've known you. Basically, 2021, 2022 has been the year that that's actually become the reality in there. So right now, if you, I suppose I'm giving away a stat, I don't know if I should be, but about 43 to 45%, depending on the category, of our A-Series customers, when they take it out on contract, are taking a watch as
well. That's amazing. Wow.
Which is phenomenal in that regard. And it just shows that we're very conscious about, one, the time, I suppose, but it's more about our well-being, monitoring our biometric impedance, our heart rates, checking the steps that I do, the integration with the likes of Strava if I'm cycling or running, you know, these kind of things. So we're seeing the customer really start to look at their devices as being optimized for what, you know, their day part, what they're using it for, and then having it integrated seamlessly in the ecosystem.
Okay. Let's just touch briefly on the entry-level side of the things. Does Samsung still make feature phones?
We don't.
You're out of that market.
We're out of that. You know, we've got a view. I spoke about a second ago where government's looking to switch off the 2G network from a handset and voice and commerce perspective. But we've got to bridge this digital divide. We've got to get the larger majority of the market onto the 4G platform. You know, it's just so many, it has such a vast benefit in terms of, you know, whether you're talking about a product like Facebook or YouTube, but access to content, access to different services that are applicable on that platform. So, we're working pretty hard with the mobile operators, with the retail partners that we have out there to bring that price point into the market, but also, again, you know, give opportunities, whether it be on a Black Friday sales promotion or through other bundling promotions, to introduce an affordable 4G handset.
Okay. So does Samsung South Africa sell any 2G or 3G only devices in this market anymore?
No, we've moved out of that
completely.
4G as a standard entry point.
Is the base entry. What is the cheapest phone you can buy cash from Samsung today?
Today, our entry price point would be 1799. On Black Friday, it was 1499.
Too late for that because we're publishing after the fact.
But we're holding that price in many of the retailers through the following week. So, and again, going into the festive season and the like, that price point will be there. But let's call it the mid 1000 mark.
Right.
And what's great about it is we've actually introduced a number of new products over the past month. in the sort of the next 1,500 rand band effectively there. So there's quite a bit of variety choice depending on screen size, battery performance that the customer's looking for.
Okay. And your thoughts on government's push to move off 2G and 3G? Do you think it's feasible to do that in the next couple of years? I imagine there's still a lot of Samsung 2G devices in the market being used. How much sense does this plan make right now?
I think the direction is correct. The timing of it is perhaps the question mark, how feasible it is. At a pure, sales perspective, it would be great if it had to happen tomorrow, sell more phones. But, realistically, I think it's, there's a very clear benefit to the consumer to be on the 4G platforms, data-rich platform, effectively like that. The mobile operators have worked incredibly hard to bring the tariff price points, the data proposition down. I know we'd always like it to be lower. We're always pushing, as consumers for that there. But we really shouldn't be leaving customers behind on a platform that is still very reliant on technology like USSD string and making standard voice. It's just such a richer environment out there. Again, I think back to the opportunities in education, the opportunities for broader civil communication and the like. These, 4G platform enables that quite substantially, and we need to make that accessible.
Before we go to Mike, one last question for you on the mobile side. 5G, you've introduced 5G devices across a range of price points now. I think you've got A-series phones that are also 5G capable. How much of the demand are you seeing in the market from consumers specifically for 5G? Is that driving consumer interest? What are you seeing out there?
So it's honestly speaking, it's not at this point in time.
It's not, okay.
Nonetheless, I think it's a catch-22 situation that we have. It's a consideration in the purchase factor, but we've done some analysis and looked at what are the key drivers of purchase of a handset, and 5G capability is fifth ranked. Mm-hmm. Okay, so price point, camera, these kind of things come through before that. The reason being is what's the proposition right now? Speed is one, but 4G advanced is pretty good in that regard. However, the mobile operators do require, more handsets on that 5G network in order to enable more services and the like. So it's a catch-22, and we've got to populate that platform. So really the direction that we've taken is to try and make sure that the 5G product introduction is at the same price as the LTE product would have been. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, we're able to do that so that we're not asking the customer to choose between the 4G device and 5G. Mm-hmm. We've brought the 5G to the 4G price point. And largely, that's been successful. And I think we'll then start to see the efforts of the mobile operator that they've been putting in start to bear fruit now as we go into probably 2023.
Good stuff. Mike van Leer, you are the Consumer Electronics Director at Samsung South Africa, and I guess you get to look after everything else outside of mobile.
What do they say, Duncan? They say everything that plugs in permanently, although we have one or two mobile products now, which is quite nice to see the expansion into that, but everything that plugs in permanently, a TV, a fridge, a washing machine, all of these exciting products, that's what I'll look after.
Great. Well, you and Justin hosted the media to an event at your new Experience Center at your head office in Bryanston, Johannesburg, and had a look at some of the latest tech that's coming down the line. And there's lots to talk about outside of mobile. So let's look at some of the stuff that that you have announced or that Samsung is working on, which is really interesting. And let's start with the big category of TVs, obviously a popular subject this week. In fact, let's talk a little bit about Black Friday since it is Black Friday week. What do you typically see on Black Friday versus the rest of the year in terms of TV sales?
Firstly, there are a couple of dynamics, I think, to Black Friday. Certainly, the month of November has now become the largest selling month for TV in the year. I guess 10 years ago, probably even 5 years ago, December or festive season was always the biggest time for these types of products. But November has surpassed that by some way.
Is that specifically because of Black Friday?
Yes, it is. It's specifically because of Black Friday. probably about 4 years ago, some of the retailers decided to make a Black Week. You'll remember that quite clearly. I think 2018 was probably the first time they did a Black Week. Justin will remember that quite clearly as well. And then a couple of years later, some of them were doing a Black Month.
Because of COVID.
Well, this was part of it. Yes, quite right. I think that the year before COVID, 2019, there were one or two retailers that ventured into Black Month. Mm-hmm. But COVID was certainly a driver in the Black Month. I guess less touch points, not having these huge crowds going into store was a big driver to that. This year, we've seen a little bit of a mix. There's some retailers going Black Month. There's some retailers going Black Week or Black 5 Day, as some of them call it. And there's even some retailers that have just stuck to one day only.
Yes.
And some of those retailers will be opening on midnight. So tomorrow night we'll be lucky enough to go to stores for the first rush.
Watch out, it's lucky.
Well, I don't think it's lucky, but of course I'll be there with some of the retail partners and it'll be an exciting time for us.
Right.
We hope that the customers will pick up a lot of TVs over this time. But, of course, lots of other products. We do our full range of products on Black Friday. It's but TV particularly is something that people look out for every November.
Is this an opportunity for you to get rid of older stock? What is Black Friday about for
Samsung? No, not at all. General life cycle of TV is 1 year for most of the brands, at any rate. Normally launched towards the beginning of the year, and I hope we'll speak about some of those new technologies that are coming into next year, particularly for us. It really revolves around two things. Number one is that, as I understand it, Black Friday was when retailers got into the black.
Okay.
So they started making a profit by November, by Thanksgiving.
That's where the name comes from.
That's where it comes from.
Okay.
And so any additional sales that they could do for the rest of the year was kind of cherry on the top for them. And it was around this time that that happened. I'm not sure if that's like that today, but that's where it originated from, around Thanksgiving, and came to our shores a few years ago, as you well know. The second is that, particularly in TV, there's efficiencies around panel production. Certainly creating volume in panel for a yearly commit is something quite beneficial to pricing. So if you can drive volume, you tend to get a better price. Mm. And all of the panel producers do that. And that's really where it comes from. And I guess that's why you get a really big saving on TV around this time.
Right. Right, let's talk about what's coming in TV specifically. We have a very tech-savvy audience, and our audience wants to know about the latest and greatest in home studio and all the rest of it. Sure. Take us through some of the big announcements that are coming. You're introducing mini LED TVs.
Well, yes, we call that quite right. Micro LED
is micro LED.
I mean. Micro LED, which is really exciting. In fact, this will probably be the most exciting year for Samsung, particularly here in South Africa. I'll start actually with the OLED technology.
Oh yes,
there are multiple technologies in TV, but in the premium space, there's really two technologies that are premium. Mm-hmm. The one is QLED, and we've been backing QLED for some time. In fact, I was asked at the beginning of the year by another media journalist when we're going to bring OLED to the shores, because we had already launched it globally. We've been doing very well with QLED. 8 out of 10 premium customers are choosing Samsung QLED over the technology of OLED.
Before you continue, what is the difference? I've always wanted to ask someone from Samsung this because I don't know the answer. I've seen the terms QLED in the market. I've seen the term QNED with an N in the market.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've seen the term OLED. What are the difference between these terms?
So in essence, OLED is an organic technology. It means that, in a way, it degrades over time. The real benefit to OLED is that the colors are extremely accurate versus what your eye can see.
You get a pure black.
And you get a very, very dark and pure black through that. The slight negative to OLED is that it is a slightly dimmer panel.
Okay.
It's not as bright as QLED. And it degrades over time. So you can get burn in on your TV over a period of time. QLED, on the other hand, is a lot brighter, and it lasts a lot longer because it's not organic. It's it's manufactured as that technology goes.
It's LED backlit.
Exactly, exactly. And but it happens to be extremely bright. And in most cases at home, at any rate, your living room will have some window or maybe even sliding doors on the side letting in a reasonable amount of light. For instance, if I had to make that choice, I would probably buy a QLED TV because it's brighter and it would last long.
So if you want to watch TV in the daytime, QLED is probably better than OLED.
Exactly, exactly. But if you're a real connoisseur and you're looking at those colors and you want those richer blacks and maybe you've got a dimmer, maybe a cinema type space, then OLED is certainly a technology that we can appreciate. And that's why we made the decision to now bring that technology to the shores of South Africa. And we'll be launching that in Q1 next year. So we're incredibly excited about that. We took a whole lot of retail partners, in fact, to Korea. And in fact, we met some as well in IFA in Berlin. In September, and they're completely blown away by the technology that they bring in. So they're bugging me. They say, when's it arriving?
What sizes are you bringing?
We'll go from 55 to 77 inch. It's typically the sizes that you bring in with OLED. That's another point on QLED is that it scales much bigger.
Okay.
So we go all the way up to 98 inch. We're very proud to bring in 4K and 8K and 98 inch. But the 4K version of 98 inches doing particularly well in South Africa. And in fact, this will be our biggest month yet.
98-inch TV.
The sales
That's
of 98
astonishingly
inch.
Large.
it's huge. Yeah. You actually need a reasonably large room for that.
Yeah.
But when you see it, it's completely incredible. And it comes with all of the tech that you need. And if
are people putting 90-inch TVs in their living rooms or are these in specialized theaters?
No. They're putting them in their living rooms.
In their living rooms.
When you speak specialized theater, generally they'll stick to OLED or they'll go projection with a screen.
Oh.
But the other exciting technology that we're bringing in is micro LED. This is very specific to this type of space. We will launch from 88 inch to 126 inch in South Africa. It's varying from around 1.5 million rand to 3 million rand.
This is this
customer that you're talking to.
Take the order now.
individually placed LEDs, the accuracy of this panel is outstanding. It's literally like you're living within the image of the TV.
And you said it goes up to what size?
126 inch.
Right, that is absolutely nice. That's a cinema screen in your house.
In fact, you can actually scale this product. And in our professional display area, we have a product called the Wall.
Yes.
This wall can scale up to any size you want, but typically people use around 146 inch. So it's made of separate panels. So literally you can scale it. But in our micro LED TV section, it comes fully boxed, fully ready to mount as would any other TV.
Right.
Which is extremely exciting.
So business you might see this used in Times Square in New York, for example.
Yes, that is also the exact same technology. It's just simply the size of the pixel pitch.
Okay.
So when you look at those large screens, which, by the way, we also do, Samsung also manufactures products like
That's a different tech. It's not the
same. Kind of the same tech, but the size of the LED makes it micro.
Yes.
And so when you're looking at it reasonably close, it's completely clear.
Mm.
But when you're looking at it, for instance, in Times Square, those LEDs are actually quite large. It just looks clear because you're far away from the image. But it's built on really the same technology.
Right. So when are these micro LED TVs going on sale?
So micro LED, we are going to be launching in a very specialized channel. We're under negotiation and some NDA with some partners.
Okay.
But it's really bespoke cinema space. And we hope to be launching those in Q1 next year.
Okay. So you'll work with a partner who will then help customers with installation, which is, I imagine,
correct.
Not a trivial thing.
It's not a trivial thing, and of course it includes a lot of other aspects to a cinema build. It's not just the panel. Mm. Of course, sound and soundproofing of a room, even cooling of the room, this type of thing is very important to that customer, and they don't have a lot of time to mess around, so they need consultants to come in, and that's why we will launch it in a very specialized channel. It won't be available in the run-of-the-mill retail.
How big is the market in South Africa for a TV that costs between 1.5 and 3 million rand?
We're about to find out.
Your best estimate?
I don't think. We're talking about ultra-high net worth individuals.
Yeah.
Probably the number of 1,500 people of this kind of stature come to mind in South Africa. The big estates that are going up with 20, 30, 40, 50, you keep going million rand houses. Mm. This is the type of customer that we would approach.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you'll sell more than around 5 or 10 of these per year.
Right.
That's kind of the size of the market, I would say.
And that'd be good business.
I guess it's good business, but it also, it just shows the technology, but it also maybe gives you a glimpse of what's to come.
Yes.
Because I think that technology over time will will continue to commoditize as it scales.
Yes.
So I guess a bit like my colleague with foldable phones, you know, in time, not next year, maybe not the year after, but in time, you'll start seeing some of these technologies coming into mainstream television.
Now, 4K versus 8K. I presume 4K is now a mainstream technology.
Yep.
You're not selling 1080p sets in much anymore, I imagine.
Oh, there's a little bit of full HD out there. I guess it's a bit like the feature phone of TV. Mm-hmm. It's a much smaller part of the market now, but there's some demand for entry-level sets, which we still play in. 32-inch, 40-inch, this is about where we cap out on those TVs. But UHD is by far the biggest part of the market. At least 50% of the market is just standard UHD, which is a 4K set.
Yeah.
And then you start moving into the QLED space with QLED. And then you move up into technology like gaming TVs.
Yes.
This is something very interesting for us because gaming is becoming bigger and bigger. It's by far the biggest growing sector in the world, and in South Africa, of course, is the same way. So whether you're a PC gamer with a monitor, and I guess we'll speak about that as well, or you're a console gamer looking for 120 hertz, you move into these types of TVs, which are all 4K content TVs. If you are pushing in 1080p content, which many of the providers still are doing, it will upscale to 4K.
Yes,
which is interesting, and in fact, I've just bought myself a new 4K TV. It happens to be the Frame TV, a lifestyle TV, which I quite liked personally. You can see very little difference between 4K content and 1080p being upscaled. I can't personally see it in my living room, for instance. So it's very interesting technology, and I guess that comes into the processing power of the TV to upscale that content into 4K,
which is becoming quite powerful.
Which is becoming extremely powerful. And by the way, the same with 8K. So 8K content is starting to come out. You've seen The Lord of the Rings coming now in 8K. It's absolutely magnificent to see this content.
What format do you get that on?
You get that in
Blu-ray 8K.
No. You can stream 8K or download 8K. It's a huge file,
yes.
I assure you. But
you can I know you can do 8K on
Amazon,
YouTube.
Amazon is bringing it in 8K. And yes, there's an 8K channel on YouTube as well. Yeah. So there is some content coming in. And as the internet speeds get more, so the content will become more available.
Yeah.
But what's also important is that if you stream in 4K, we upscale it to the 8K as well. So the screen is absolutely magnificent when you see it.
Yeah.
You know, 65-inch and above is really where you start to see that blossom.
For sure. And of course, MultiChoice is broadcasting the World Cup in 4K, it's the first 4K.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that's where I saw the difference between 1080p upscaled and the 4K. I can't see the difference with the Samsung TV upscaling it to the 4K content. I couldn't see the difference watching the first World Cup game, which was interesting to see.
And interesting what you say about gaming, and I know the new Xbox, and I presume the new PlayStation as well, support things like high refresh rates, like 120 hertz, high dynamic range, and similar technologies. Yep. You're seeing demand specifically from customers who want to play Xbox, I presume, and possibly even use these TVs as monitors for gaming on PCs, demanding these sort of technologies like high refresh rate, etc.
Firstly, the segment, gaming segment in the premium segment, is the largest growing segment.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen growth even as small as 43-inch.
Yes.
43-inch actually is an ideal size for a gamer, especially a high-end gamer.
Yes.
Because they don't want to look left and right. It loses some time to be able to look. So 43-inch that we introduced, in fact, this year, it's called the 43QN90 with 120 hertz refresh rate, has been a crazy success. We keep running out of this inventory, and we bring in more and more and more. But whether it's 43, 50, 55, 65, in fact, the 98-inch that I spoke about is also a QN90 range, 120 hertz refresh rate, absolutely dedicated for that console gamer.
Right.
By the way, we don't see that many people using TV for PC gaming.
You don't?
No. And it's because of size. Generally speaking, you're sitting at a desk, and that TV is actually too large for what you need. So we've seen sizes of 27-inch, 32-inch, around about the optimal size for a monitor. Yes, we do 49-inch, which is in fact two 27-inches together, which is important because then you have the split screen. And I'm sure you're going to ask me about it, but the Odyssey Arc.
Which I was about to say you do a 65 inch one too.
Yeah, it's in fact a 55 inch, and that splits into three 27 inch screens. So you can split your YouTube channel, your chat box, and of course your game into three, and it kind of curves over you.
You were very kind to send it through to us, and we had it in our studio here. Until
which means you could probably tell me more about it than I can. But a wonderful product, and we've seen huge demand for that. You'll know that gamers are spending an exorbitant amount of money on their tech, and they're demanding panels that can give them that sort of refresh rate: 144 hertz, 165 hertz, 240 hertz. That's been demanded depending on the graphics card and the capability of the machine. And I don't think it ever ends for the upgrading of these machines. But these monitors now can match the performance of the machine. And this Odyssey Arc was something that has been accepted. I don't even know how to say it. Well, let me put it this way. We were at IFA in September in Berlin. There were two of these on display, and you had to queue up to be able to engage with the product. And I can tell you that we had flips and folds. They built walls out of flips and folds that were opening and closing, you know, which was really impressive. But what was more impressive was the Odyssey Arc. Somehow they were queuing to see this. And we were, in fact, I myself queued to see it and then sat down the gaming chair and it curves over you.
Yes.
It's absolutely amazing. As you've seen.
As a big fan of Microsoft Flight Simulator, I can say it's very, very immersive. But I can see it also appealing not only to the gaming market, but also potentially to stockbrokers. Someone could have their Bloomberg terminal. So they have their financial information at the top of the screen.
Exactly.
They could have a search engine and their whatever else they do, the Excel spreadsheets while they're crunching company numbers in the bottom part of the screen. It would appeal to that market as well.
Exactly.
But it is a massive, massive screen, but definitely quite niche, I'd imagine.
Look forward to seeing the write-up.
So, what else are you guys announcing? You've got new projection technology coming in audiovisual?
Yeah, I mean, we've got tons of things to speak about, but audiovisuals specifically, we launched LSP9, a short throw projector, which goes up to 120 hertz. That was about 2 years ago. But we brought in its younger brother called the Freestyle. I'm not sure if you've seen the product, but it's sort of just a bit larger than a can of beans that you can carry around. It's 700 grams. It projects up to 100 inches.
I did see this. You showed it to me at Mustek.
Exactly. So it's got multiple uses, but it's they don't like me calling it this, but it's like a portable TV because it's got all of the Tizen content and apps built into it, just the same as any Samsung TV.
Right.
So all of your streaming services are already built in, and you can set it up and go at 100 inches. You can put it on the roof. You can put it on any wall. It auto-focuses, auto-corrects. It's an absolutely amazing product. What's even better about it is that you can get an external battery pack that lasts up to 4 hours. So if there's some load shedding, this type of thing, you can still connect to your Freestyle projector. Or you can take it camping, or you can give it to the kids when you go into a hotel room or your home at the coast or whatever the case is, and they can set up and watch any kind of content whatsoever. It screen shares to any device in the, whether it be mobile or TV. And of course, you can share any content with the device as well through Bluetooth and Wi-Fi or NFC, whatever you like.
Right. Before we leave the audiovisual stuff, I have to ask you a question. Actually, our studio editor and I were discussing this this morning. About 10 or 15 years ago, 3D TV was the thing. Television manufacturers couldn't sell a TV if it didn't have 3D in it. And then it disappeared. And now I don't think these modern TVs even support 3D anymore. What happened?
Boy, that was a long time ago. It was before I even took over TV at Samsung. I guess the technology was fleeting. I guess there was some parts of it that were wanted, and you needed some sort of a device or some pair of glasses to be able to sort of, if you remember correctly. Mm. But I also think that the quality of the TVs just began to get so good that really it was very immersive at any rate. Mm. And if you see some of the TVs that we've launched now, I mean, the immersiveness of it, and I know not everyone has 1.5 or 3 million rand to spend on a TV, but when I saw that TV, some of the customers actually joked, this is like the 3D TV, because it seems to have depth.
Right.
So I think the technology of TVs, you know, basically moved on and made it redundant. And the immersiveness of the quality of the TV was just good enough.
Mm. If I add to that, I mean, you often find the base of these technologies or these ideas coming back in other ways. And, you know, one of the things that we see, and not even Samsung, but the research is showing that there's going to be a resurgence in VR technology coming through, starting effectively from next year and ramping up. And you often find this thing that there's a lot of hype created within the space around an idea. And I think Gartner, a research company, puts it nicely as you get the hype and you get this valley of despondency where everybody thinks, oh, it's over. And then slowly out comes this curve of where the technology gets purchased and the like. And you will start to see things like VR technology, 3D immersion, that coming in, perhaps not in the original form envisaged of a TV. Mm. But again, I think the point is right, is that these days the immersiveness of the panels also exist.
Yeah, but 3D, I think, went through that Gartner hype curve, went down into the valley of despondency and never emerged.
And never emerged, fair enough. True.
8K, is this the future of TV? Or, I mean, are people's eyesight good enough to tell the difference between 8K and 4K?
Mine isn't. No, but with a little bit of help with my glasses. Yeah, I think that will become it will become the natural progression into the next realm. I think 8K will become a stock standard. So just like you said, 4K has become the norm. I think 8K in time will become the norm.
I don't think that this decade?
Yes, I think so. I think so. It's got a lot to do with connectivity and speed.
Right.
The file sizes are large. So even some of the biggest markets in the world would, you know, it would be difficult to stream or download a, you know, full-length feature film.
Yeah.
But certainly I think that will become the stock standard without any doubt.
As internet infrastructure gets better and better. And
exactly.
Gigabit connections at home.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, we're almost there, right? Yeah, we're almost there. Yeah, I think I'm on a 500 meg line. So it needs to get there and then it'll become stock standard.
Before we wrap, you don't only do audiovisual stuff, of course, you also do fridges and other appliances.
Sure.
Not really the focus of Tech Central, but out of interest, what is some of the stuff? What's some of the stuff happening in refrigeration and dishwashing and all the rest of it?
This is something you should really look at. Yeah. When we went to IFA in September, there were two things that I noticed, two major themes on the Samsung stand. The first was smart things.
Mm-hmm.
And we know smart things. We've known it for some time. But there's a renewed energy behind smart things.
This is your IoT platform.
Correct. Mm. What's interesting about the platform, number one, it's open. We've co-developed applications and products with over 400 vendors now, which is important. So things like, and I can even say this, can you believe it, Philips globes that you can connect to, change the, obviously turn it on and off, but change the hue and change the color, this type of thing, was prevalent even on our stand. But what was very interesting is that they had connected smart things to a PV system.
Mm-hmm.
Which in the middle of Europe I found a little bit strange. It's quite easy to see a lot of solar systems in South Africa. But I found it to be a little bit strange. And an element of SmartThings is SmartThings Energy.
Right.
Which is which looks at your energy consumption in the house, which is not only a sustainable thing, but also a cost. And as you know, energy prices are rising globally. They're rising here. And so if you can look on one application what energy you're using within your home and you can save money and you can save energy, which means saving the planet, it's a good thing. And they walked us through a home connected to a plethora of devices, including home appliances.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, I think this ecosystem is starting to expand now. So looking at the energy usage of your air conditioner, for instance, you know, if an air conditioner has a digital inverter like our digital inverters have, it saves up to 77% input. But if you're running a PV system, rather cool the home down when the sun is up and then keep the ambient temperature and save the energy there. It's the same with using dishwashers or tumble dryers or washing machines. These typically use a lot of energy. Yes, we have technologies of digital inverter, which save you a lot of power, but the time of the day that you use it can also change the way you use consumption. And SmartThings is guiding that. Not only off your smartphone, which of course is a normal place that you would have this, but you can also use your TV as the hub to see where your energy has been used in the business. And so the importance of appliance for us is critical to the complete ecosystem. So you'll see connected fridges, connected washing machines, connected dishwashers. It's not about just saying when you need to order more food or how you order food or those types of things. It's also about mapping out that energy usage, which I thought was an incredibly important topic that they brought up, that Samsung brought up in IFA this year. So we've got a full range of bespoke product. You'll know bespoke probably from the showroom, but it is a multicolored device, so you can change the panels as you wish. But what's also important is that you can scale it. So when you first, you get your first job and you want a sort of a bottom mount freezer, you don't need too much fridge space, you can buy a bespoke and put it in your home. When you decide now that you're married and you have another companion at home, then you can put another one-door fridge. And if you have kids, then like me, I've got two teenagers. Mm-hmm. You need then a four-door fridge that you can add to it. So it's scaled like this. And if you don't like the color after a year, then you can change the color, this type of thing. And fully connected, of course, with all the bells and whistles and digital inverter technology. So that's a very interesting space for us. We'll be expanding that range. So bespoke will also be available in washing machine, dishwasher, dryer, microwave oven. So multicolors, you can buy the colors of the kitchen and fits into your lifestyle and your home, which can make a happy wife, I suspect.
And these are all interconnected and connected to the internet. I mean, there was a lot of talk years ago about your fridge replenishing the groceries in it by itself automatically. Has that ever really happened?
It does, funnily enough. Yeah. We have a fridge that we've developed in Korea, of course, and Western Europe and in the States called Family Hub, which is also a bespoke product. You can also change that color, but it has a built-in, the new one has a built-in 32-inch touch device, which you can do all of these things, including connecting to the online shopping. And I suppose when you're at work and you think, you can have a look what's in your fridge and say, oh, I need this, I need this, I need this. You can connect to it and then just tell it to order whatever you want. And some retailers, I believe, send it to you within 60 minutes.
Amazing. Lots of exciting things happening. Guys, thanks so much for taking the time to join us in the studio. Justin Hume is Vice President for Mobile at Samsung South Africa. And Mike Finlier is Consumer Electronics Director at Samsung South Africa. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here.